What the EFL? It's the Weekly Football League podcast. On this episode, the Championship returns, sort of, as a black cat crossing their path means bad luck for Millwall. It's access all areas at Wickham. Orient dug out another win as they look for a Pizza League One action. And Challoner's X-Factor nobbles Hartlepool. We've got scouting reports and more, all in this edition of What the EFL, powered by Quinbet. Hello again, gang. Here we are then, a little later than usual, but back to discuss everything Football League related. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. Hot dog, Adrian Clark's with us too.
Hello. It's my fault. It's my fault that we're delayed by a day. A suspect sausage scuppered my entire Monday, I'm afraid. So, a total write-off. My trip to Wickham was absolutely fantastic until the last action, which was to buy a late doors hot dog from one of those vendors outside. And it destroyed my Monday and my insides.
A terrible weekend at Wickham, and David Craig had nothing to do with it. Sam Parkins also with us. Sam, how'd you get your shoes to look that shiny on the telly?
You have to tread carefully. I don't want to come across all big time, but if you know your shoes, that's a pair of churches they are, Matt. Sean Dyche will be purring.
Sean Dyche, yeah.
He'll be purring as I say this, because I think they're made in Northampton as well. They're very welcome to supply me with some shoes, but they probably supply like David Beckham and Piers Brosnan and Idris Elba. So I don't imagine I'm at the top of their list, but they are probably the best shoe I've ever had. They are delightful. And I didn't do anything to them. They were probably dirty. They were probably dirty. In fact, I didn't even cross my mind, but I wanted to up my game a little bit because the last time Ollie Bell was on, I think he'd come straight from Goodwood and he was very smart and I was
looking glorious
and I was very not. So I wanted to give it a bit this week and I think it worked.
Yeah, it made an impression on me, definitely. I really liked him. Anyway, I mentioned Quinbet. To coincide with the World Cup, they have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet up to £35. For new customers that sign up only, head to www.quinbet.com/world-cup-2022-offer-UK, or just head to their website and you can find it from there. You can check out full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. So Brazil and Argentina, the boys' pick still in it. Brazil very good against South Korea on Monday. They're 15-8 favourites with Quinbet. Argentina third favourites at 11-2. I quite like the like of this, Clark. You can get 2-1 on England to beat France in 90 minutes, that price accurate at the time of recording. That feels fairly generous.
I think it does, yeah. Very generous, actually. You could see it going to extra time. But now, ahead of the last round, I was asked what the value bet was in terms of the outrights. And I said England. They were like over 10-1. I think the draw isn't that unfavourable. They obviously played great against Senegal, so they've come in a bit. Yeah, I'm loath to say it, but I'm quite optimistic about England at the moment. So let's see.
Sam, why do we always do this to ourselves? We know it ends, right? England don't win the World Cup. They're going to go out on Saturday to France.
Oh, I'm so conflicted. It does feel like we're onto something, doesn't it? I mean, all these young players, the amount of goals that have been going in. I completely agree with Clarkey there. Well, I think England the value, and also France probably. I think they've ran about 4-1, something like that as well. Yeah, and I saw some people who had a similar thought process to me in the week as well. I thought Harry Kane, as player of the tournament, was a really good shout before the knockout stages. And now he's got that goal. You wouldn't be surprised if he kicked on and got a few more before the end of the tournament. I think his performances have been great. I don't know what you think, Clarkey. I'm biased because I'm an ex-striker and I love him so much. But this talk of him being sluggish, nonsense.
No, I'm not having that. No, he's definitely not been sluggish. I mean, we've not seen the way he crossed the ball. I mean, he's absolutely superb.
He's played about 10 of the most dreamy passes I've seen in my life in this tournament.
Yeah. No, he won't get player of the tournament. And Mbappe's got it now in lockdown. Or Messi. How good was Messi in that last game? I mean, I think he's been great in every game as well.
Aren't you almost defined by what happens in the semi-finals and the finals, though, for that coveted trophy? Is it coveted? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the golden ball.
I didn't
ball,
even know it was a... Oh, yeah, the golden ball. That's right. That's what it's called. Yeah, I got you. 9-2 France with Quinbet to win the thing. I was looking for Harry Kane, player of the... here he is. Harry Edward Kane. They've got him down. That's 33-1 player of the tournament. We shall see. Anyway, that's enough World Cup. We're going to start today proper with news of another sacking in the Football League. Right then, he's red and white, fond of the sack, but not particularly jolly. That's the Charlton owner, Thomas Sandgaard. He's Biff Ben Garner as Addicks boss after just 6 months in charge. They've only taken 2 points from their past five league games. They're 17th in the division. Speaking after the weekend defeat at home, Garner said, "You can keep changing manager every 3 or 4 months if you want. It's deeper than that. It's a cultural issue. It's a mentality issue." Adrian, the owner, disagreed with that. Richard Cawley of the South London Press reporting Garner actually told the players he'd been sacked after he took the training session on Monday. Do you remember when this owner took over Charlton and we thought this is the much needed stability they need after the Duchatelet era?
Yeah, he hasn't brought a lot, has he? It was a big move, wasn't it, to sack our mate JJ, club legend. And you would have thought, in the eyes of the fans, to sack him and to then... For the person that you're replacing with to get rid of them so quickly is a big no-no. So he's under a lot of pressure now, I would imagine, the owner, because a lot of Charlton fans were very sad to see Johnny leave. I don't know, I'm a bit conflicted about this because Ben Garner's clearly a bit more of a philosophy / culture manager, as he's labelled there. He's someone that you probably need to employ for the long term. But with the squad that he's got, do I think they should have had better results? I do, yeah. Creating a lot of chances, scoring plenty. I think they've scored more goals than Barnsley, Bolton, Portsmouth. They're all in the mix for promotion, but at the wrong end of the pitch or the other end of the pitch, not good enough. Yeah, making far too many mistakes. Is that down to Ben Garner or is that down to the individuals or is it potentially partly down to Ben Garner and what he's asking those players to do? Because as we know, he's probably not... Not a manager that simplifies things. I think he's looking for technical players. Maybe they're overcomplicating matters at Charlton. I'm not quite sure. But yeah, it's not a great move. It's not a great season, is it?
Sam, you know him better than us from his time at Swindon, of course. I wonder if there's sort of shades of Rob Edwards at Watford here in that Garner's reputation isn't particularly impacted by this because he can just say, well, it's not my fault. It's a nutty club at the moment. There wasn't much I could do about it.
There's a bit of that, but obviously he had the spell at Bristol Rovers, which didn't go particularly well either. So it might not be a foregone conclusion, him walking into a really good League One job, if you like. There'll be some Swindon fans with smiles on their faces this morning, naturally, given the way that he left and obviously took three of Swindon's better players as well. But I completely agree with Clarkie, really. I think it's crazy to get rid of him right now. That said, they should have more points on the board, unquestionably. I look at that squad, and it's not maybe for me about what they did in the last window. It's what they've done over the last few windows. And I think there is a decent squad there with a lot of quality players. What I will add, though, is there the type of player that can play the Ben Garner football? And when I look at some of the players that were brought in the summer, defensively, not good enough stopping goals. I don't think he's got the players to play the football, to play through the thirds. I don't think the centre-halves are good enough. So much so that he played two kids at the weekend, league debuts, Ness and Mitchell, who's a 17-year-old. I think that shows you that, you know, he's not happy with his lot. So some of that is down to the recruitment and some of that's down to the owner, I would say. And I did see, I'm going to be tongue-in-cheek here, but I did see his son, who's got some kind of involvement there, Thomas Sandgaard's son, sat in the stand with his initials on the old jacket. And that just doesn't smell right to me.
Yeah, some of the reporting saying that the relationship between the son and Ben Garner was one of the reasons that this has broken down. I mentioned Richard Cawley of the South London Press. He's the man on the Charlton beat there. He also says that Kenny Jackett has been at Addicks games of late, so he's a likely candidate to replace.
I'm not
the heads all round.
I'm not caning Kenny Jackett, but I mean, if you could think of two opposite managers out there, Ben Garner, Kenny Jackett, I think, you know, they're pretty poles apart, I would say.
He's on your League One manager. Your bingo card, though, isn't he?
Of course he is.
But I mean, it's probably certainly different ways about going about it. But what's the difference to Kenny Jackett and Nigel Adkins, for example? And he's already had Nigel Adkins at the helm, and that didn't work out either, did it?
Give it to boy Sandgaard till the end of the season. Let's see what he's got.
Elsewhere, Fraser's Group, owned by Mike Ashley, have given an eviction notice to Coventry City to leave the CBS Arena. Their existing agreement meant the club could stay till 2031. But in a statement, Coventry said, "Fraser's Group have now presented to Coventry City a new agreement with new commercial terms which have been presented to us without any dialogue or negotiations and are less favourable to the football club." Rumours that this would mean the players coming out with oversized Sports Direct team mugs. Unconfirmed at time of recording. The Coventry City Council seem hopeful a resolution can be found. Clarkie, you brought this one up because you're making the point that maybe it's commentary having just been taken over, we thought all this kind of suffering that they've gone through off the pitch over recent years would be ended. But as you say, that there will come a point when Mark Robbins might get tired of all this and think there's an easier road to travel somewhere else.
Yeah, well, he's reportedly on the hit list of Queen's Park Rangers, and understandably so. I think he's pound for pound one of the best managers in the EFL. He's been sensational, and all this politics, all this off the field wranglings, game playing is kind of what I would describe this as in regards to Ashley, maybe holding the club to ransom to try and get a better deal moving forward. It just leaves a sour taste. So Mark Robbins, I wouldn't blame him if he was to just say, you know what, I'm done. I've had enough. I'm not saying he should, because, you know, I like Coventry City. I love I like their fans. It's a club local to me here. I don't want them to lose him, but in his shoes, if Queen's Park Rangers came in for me, I think I'd go.
Sam will talk more QPR managerial movements later, but would he be a top choice for you? It's your team of choice, of course.
I wouldn't be unhappy with it. I'd probably be a little surprised. I think he's only early 50s, isn't he, Mark Robbins, I would imagine. But I think they'd probably still go with someone younger, maybe. If you were to get Mark Robbins, you'd have to take the whole team, because I've spoken, you know, so often on this podcast about the work AD Vivash does. AD's obviously worked in the capital before, just down the road at Chelsea, great with young players, obviously had that real fruitful spell at Chelsea in their academy. And I know that those two are a partnership, if you like. Mark Robbins very much comes to life on match days. I would imagine he's a brilliant guy to play for, but AD does a lot of the work on the training ground, so that they would come as a team, I would imagine. If QPR could secure them and the backroom staff, then yeah, it would be a good option, but I wouldn't imagine they'd go down that road, would be my hunch.
All right, well, whatever happens, let's hope that Coventry supporters can get a feeling of settlement sooner or later on the ground and on everything else, because it has been a turbulent, best part of a decade, you'd say, for that particular club. All right, that was the news. Next today, we'll look back on the best of the weekend's action. Just the one championship game, for some reason, it went down at the Stadium of Light. Turned out to be a comfortable afternoon's work for Sunderland as they beat Millwall 3-0 to move up to 10th. Could have been different, though, this. Millwall missed a great chance to go 1-0 up. Ziyech Fleming, who we'd praised for his performance against Preston a few weeks back, missed an early open goal after a defensive mistake. But after that, Sam, it was really only one winner here.
Yeah, a bit of a game of two halves, wasn't it? I thought, you know, Millwall flexed their muscles in the first half. That, you know, threat from set pieces was really evident. There was a stat that came up on Sky. It was just before I left the house, so towards the tail end of the first half, where Millwall had 15 touches in Sunderland's box after about 40 minutes, and Sunderland had one, which I thought emphasised their supremacy, really, Millwall. Sunderland did well to hang in the game. They're a bit patched up defensively. That said, they went on to get a clean sheet, but with Luke O'Nien at centre-half and Lyndon Gooch at right-back, some obvious big players missing in that department, it called for a massive performance from Danny Batt, and I think they got that. He was imperious and obviously had a nasty cut as well in the first half when he got whacked by Bradshaw. So he was colossal in the second period. And yeah, we've spoken again often about the kind of diminutive flair players that Sunderland have in their ranks, and they ultimately were the difference in the second half once Millwall hadn't got their nose in front.
Yeah, Alex Pritchard, impressive here. Obviously, the goal scorers catch the eye, Clarke, in games like this. Ahmad and Ellis Sims on target, and made me think that something that Tony Mowbray seems to be very good at is getting the best out of young loan players. We spoke a lot, didn't we, about Harvey Elliott at Blackburn, but I wonder if that makes Sunderland a more attractive club for big Premier League sides to send their young players to, knowing that he's got this reputation now of fostering and improving young talent.
100%. That's what clubs look for now. They build relationships either with clubs or with individual coaches. And Tony Mowbray is a manager that Premier League teams trust. They've seen what he did with Harvey Elliott and others, by the way, throughout his career. And they've they'll follow suit. I really like the forward line at Sunderland. Once they can get the defenders back, then I think that they're strong at both ends. I mean, you look at what happened at the weekend. You had Ellis Sims up front, who I really like. Obviously, beautiful flick for the Ahmad goal inside the box, and he scored the last goal. Every time I see him, he impresses. And then you've got Pritchard, Jack Clark, and Ahmad on loan from Manchester United. These are all three very talented players that can do a little bit of everything. And I haven't even mentioned Ross Stewart, who's about to come back. So any four from those five are fit and available, I think that Sunderland are going to be a menace for anyone in the division. It is at the back where they've had issues, and they rode their luck in this game, as Sam outlined. Yeah, Dan Ballard coming back will make a difference there, I would imagine. So, yeah, I think we called it, didn't we? I think this time last week we did a preview of the game, and we both sort of fancied Sunderland, and they came good on that.
Yeah, Clarkie's reeled off a few of the names there. He didn't mention Patrick Roberts,
who
Tony Mowbray said was the most talented player in the division, yet he's having to pull him into the office on a Friday and say, sorry, son, you're on the duty.
and I think the follow-up to that was, why are you on the duty? And it's Wamad scoring every game. He's assisting every game, getting into the box. So, yeah, it's... yeah, you're right. I mean, any four from that six, I should have said.
For younger listeners, Judi Dench is a British actor of some repute. 87 she is now. Still going on, though.
Did an interview with Louis Theroux.
Yeah, she did, didn't she? Yeah, on the Skybox,
yeah. A little bit disappointing.
Oh, okay, fine. The Bear Grylls on was
I'm on to Rita Ora now.
Right. Nice. Okay. We're on to League One, where there was a shock at Home Park on Friday night as the leaders Plymouth, previously perfect at home, lost 2-0 to Port Vale. My immediate reaction to this, Sam, was to say, oh, just one of those nights for Plymouth. Frustrating. They had all the ball, 15 shots, but couldn't score. And then I looked at the quotes from Stephen Schumacher. We didn't deserve anything from the game. There are no excuses. Port Vale were the better team throughout the whole game. Sounds like he's not viewing it as just one of those nights.
No, and interesting because of, you know, what you said. And when you watch the chances, Hardy had a real presentable one. I think Ennis spurned two great opportunities, real gilt-edged type stuff. So you would feel that maybe they left feeling they could have got at least a point from it. But I think the general flow of the game, Port Vale did a magnificent job at disrupting Plymouth, making their passes go astray. And it's a bit of a blueprint, really. If you look at the last few results, you look at the teams they've been up against, I think Grimsby, Lincoln, Burton and now Port Vale have all kind of got after Plymouth when they're trying to play out. They've really closed them aggressively. Port Vale do that. We saw that at the tail end of last year in those playoff games against Swindon, against the football inside. I think they're well coached. That is kind of Darryl Clark's style, his mantra, to play with real energy and aggression to disrupt the opponent. And it worked wonderfully well in this game. And they've got some real talented players at both ends. I've always liked Nathan Smith defensively. I've read a lot about Dan Jones's performances recently, who had a bit of a nomadic career, had a bad injury last year, missed football since December. So he's just getting back his fitness, but really good as part of the back three. And James Wilson is a really talented player, I think. I think he's got great technical ability and he popped up with a couple of goals here. So a great result for them. A bit of a worry for Plymouth. I think maybe he may have to be a bit more adaptable, a bit more versatile with his setup. Obviously, there's no reason for panic right now, but I think if teams are kind of getting joy at closing them and dispossessing them and causing them problems, he may have to look at a different style that isn't maybe so possession heavy and so through the third. So a couple of players to come back as well as Az, obviously, who Clarkie scouted early part of the season, and Dan Scar, they need him back desperately. No clean sheet in 8 in all comps now, 7 in the league. So start keeping clean sheets again. They'd have no problem, but I think that's a little bit of an issue right now.
They still could have scrambled a draw there, couldn't they? There's a lot of good effort, good chances. It took a little bit of good fortune, I think, from Port Vale to get over the line. On Port Vale, very quickly, 20 points now from their last 12 games. That tells you that this run of form could be sustainable. It's not over 2 or 3 games. It's over, you know, a large portion of the season now. They've been up there. I think they ranked 7th over those 12 games. So Port Vale could be dark horses to maybe nick that last playoff spot. I think they're underdogs to do it, but as Sam outlines, they're awkward and they'll pick up points playing that way.
Nice to hear the phrase dark horses used in a non-World Cup context in this particular period. They are just 2 points off the playoffs. Port Vale, Plymouth still top, albeit only by a point from Ipswich. Shout out to the 400 Port Vale fans who made that trip. 500 miles all around. Pretty good for a Friday night, that. That was on Friday. On Sunday, meanwhile, Wycombe Wanderers versus Portsmouth was Sky's Access All Areas game. Cameras allowed to see into the dressing rooms at halftime, eavesdrop on the pre-match chat between ref and captains and more. That was met with mixed reviews, but it was a thumbs up all round for Wycombe, who got the W here thanks to a goal in each half from Anis Mehmeti and Gareth McCleary. Clarkie was on hand to witness it live. You didn't see anything to do with this Access All Areas stuff, Adrian. I know that. But you did see Anis Mehmeti, and he was a standout performer here, right?
Oh, he's so good. Yeah. Yeah, we did a scouting report on him earlier this season, didn't we? And yeah, he's living up to the hype, I've got to say. This was an excellent performance from him. He played in a number 10 role. Now, he's a natural winger, I think, that can play on the left or the right. But here he was given a free role in behind the main striker, Brandon Hanlon. And so good. Just so good going left, going right. I think he had 5 shots in the game, 8 dribbles. Fantastic. And I think playing centrally and producing those sort of mazy dribbles in a more unpredictable way, i.e. just popping up in unusual areas, really did befuddle Portsmouth. And yeah, great goal from him into the top corner. Excellent assist, lovely run and cross in the second half for Gareth McCleary. He looks a player that is destined for at least the championship. I think Wickham can make some good money on Anis Mehmeti. I really do. He often with players like him, they look frustrating. And I think that he probably can be. But in this game, he didn't do anything that was frustrating at all. So there were no sort of overly flash moments. His head was switched on and he was superb. One other player, I have to say, from Wickham, who were great on the day, absolutely bullied Pompey, made it their type of game, especially first half. Josh Goen. I swear there were two of them, two Josh Goens on that pitch. It was mental. He was just everywhere, just breaking up play, winning the second ball, just doing all of that donkey work, all the dirty work. It was quite incredible. So, yeah, I thought it was a really strong team performance from Wycombe Wanderers. Pompey were absolute garbage. And that's probably being kind to them in the first half. They were so weak, passive, no quality, didn't. Sort of abandoned any attempts to pass the ball properly. It was only after a rocket from Cowley at halftime that they improved. But yeah, got a lot of work to do, Pompey.
Yeah, not got many goals in them either. Just looking at their league results, the last time they scored more than one in a match was when they lost 3-2 to Ipswich, and that was on the 1st of October. So problems for the Cowley brothers. Meanwhile, in League Two, Leighton Orient might be out of sight in the promotion race by the time the Christmas decorations come down, Clarkie. Now 14 points clear of the playoff pack, this after they bashed Bradford in East London. Not surprising, therefore, that they've already given Richie Wellens an extended contract.
Yeah, he's done so well, hasn't he? It's they look nailed on, don't they? Just very good throughout every department, aren't they? They scored some good goals as well in this game. Tom James, beautiful, beautiful goal, wasn't it? The second one, a curler into the top corner. He scored a lot of long-range goals over the last 2 or 3 years, Tom James, from fullback. And there was almost a carbon copy for the third, wasn't there? From another corner, played out to the edge of the box, and his volley then set up the third. So, yeah, it's very impressive. I mean, why wouldn't they give Wellens a contract? Won 15 out of 20 games this season in the league. They've only conceded 12 goals in those 20 matches. And they just got incredible belief and game management. So when they get their noses in front, it's done. The stats tell you that. 14 times when they were 1-0 up, they've gone on to win the game. The other time when they were 1-0 up, they drew the game. They haven't lost one yet. That is mightily impressive. Obviously, the forwards get a lot of the praise. Archibald, Smythe, Kelman, all really, really good. But I just wanted to pick out Idris Mazzouni, the midfielder. Him and Prattley made 10 tackles between them in this game. And I was looking at the sort of numbers across the season, and no midfielder in League Two wins more tackles than Mazzouni, who's on loan from Ipswich. So they've got a strong defence. They've got loads of options up front that are all chipping in with goals. And then they've got Prattley and Mazzouni in there that just do that sort of dogging and set the platform for the team. So yeah, there's loads to like about Leighton Orient. Not so much for Bradford. That's twice in a few weeks now. They've had the chance, haven't they? They've had that chance. Say, right, we're a big gun in this division. It was Northampton a couple of weeks ago. It was Leighton Orient this time. What have we got? And they started both games well, conceded, and then caved. So Bradford, I think, need a bit more resilience, a bit more, yeah, sort of tactical stability. When they have a setback, this Bradford team, they're not great.
More steel from Sparky. Sam, did you see the thing that I put in the running order about how you can sit in the deluxe dugout at Leighton Orient? Or can I explain it to you
deluxe?
For the time?
Did you say deluxe? Okay.
I did. And weirdly, I don't know if it was when I was playing there. It probably might have been because I wasn't scoring any goals. So I was probably looking at other things in the stadium when I should have been concentrating on my finishing. But I do recall seeing the pizza being delivered. So I don't know if it's from then or when I was...
Okay, so this is a long-standing thing then. So,
it could have been when I was covering a game, but it wasn't long after I'd retired. So this has been going on a while.
I mean, you'd notice a pizza being delivered to the side of a pitch, whether you were playing, refereeing, or just watching.
I definitely saw a pizza being delivered on a moped, far right-hand corner it came in and came round the stadium, I swear. It might have been when I was covering the game, but I've definitely seen it happen, yeah. And I thought, yeah, nice way to celebrate a birthday with a few mates, wouldn't it be? Getting a dugout or kid's birthday or something like that. I think it's a great idea.
I do. Innovation, isn't it? I think, what's it work out? About 40 quid a pop. So it's cheap, but you do get a pizza.
So if you miss this, listener, it's 320 quid up to 9 people to sit in this dugout, which is in between two of the stands in the corner at Brisbane Road. You get a free pizza delivered. Don't take our word for it. This is from Ollie, supporter, quoted on the Leighton Orient website. An amazing experience. My toes were on the pitch from my seat. Great view and really good fun. Me and my friends loved it. And the pizzas were great. Problem comes, Clarkie, when your toes are on the pitch and you trip up the top goal scorer and he's out for the season. Yeah. And then
it's not the best view right in front of the corner flag. It's not. I wouldn't say that's the best view in the house.
Do you reckon they got to vet them so they're not like absolutely screaming verbals at the linesman?
Yes. Please note, the Papa John's third dugout is only available to home fans. The club reserve the right to refuse or revoke admission to any guests not following this restriction. So they got you covered on that. But yeah, if you want to make an inquiry about it, go on the Leighton Orient website, email commercial@leightonorient.net. I don't know why I'm doing that.
Why are you doing this?
Because I'm sort of hoping that they'll go, hey, thanks for plugging that on the podcast. Do you and Sam and Adrian want to come down one week and do one live and we'll deliver you a meat feast? And I'll say, yes,
Christmas.
We do.
We're going to have our Christmas party in the dugout. Yeah, can't we?
I'd like to think that you get indoors for a little pre-match beverage in a nice, little suite as well. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And a programme, maybe.
You get to see a home win, that's for sure. Elsewhere, horrible when you see your ex back on your old patch, isn't it? Especially when they're with their much better off, more attractive new partner. Yeah, that's a lament on my own life. But it's also a clunky and somewhat humiliating way of introducing our chat on Hartlepool 0. Stockport 5, not exactly sexy time for Keith Curl here. Clunky and humiliating, good words to describe his team possibly here. Vindication for Dave Challoner, Sam.
Yeah, I think I'll start with the home side because the punters would have been turning up to the news that he signed a contract, two-year contract, I think, Keith Curl, which, we loved his blue post-match interview, but they've lost 7 in 8 games. And for an ex-defender, he certainly hasn't shored them up in that regard. I conceded 23 at home. That's 6 more than anyone else and 9 more than anyone else, you know, collectively home and away. So that's where they need to improve. That said, they had a little upturn when he first came in. Do you remember Josh Umara scored 4 in 3, I think, when Keith Curl was appointed? He's not scored in 5, and the team has scored 3 in the last 5 games. So it's not all Keith Curl's doing, let me hasten to add. I think they've signed a lot of players that aren't good enough in the summer for Paul Hartley. That's a squad that he's been stuck with, and he's going to have some wriggle room in January. But if the word coming out of the supporters is anything to go on, they don't think they're going to get their backing from the owner. So I think there's a big problem at that club right now. I think a lot of it is probably down to the ownership and the hierarchy rather than the incumbent of the dugout right now. But yeah, this was a desperate defeat against a side who I've been tipping up. I fancy them. I really do. You see the top three right now. I think that's could be almost set in stone now. I think with Orient, Stevenage and Northampton, but with the sides outside that pack, we've spoken of Bradford already today. You can't discount Mansfield, I don't think. And then you've got Stockport, I think, down in 12th now. But I think they've got, you know, a really good squad. Defensively, Horsfall's looking excellent now. Know how good he was for Northampton. The front two are scoring goals. They press aggressively, win the ball high, play good football, and they're in a real rich vein of form. Only Stevenage and Walsall taking more points over the last 10 games. 6 wins in 9. A goalkeeper who's got 7 clean sheets in his last 10. Hinchcliffe is on the cusp of 300 games for the club. So in all departments, it's going really, really well. But this was a second half collapse from Hartlepool. So a good opponent for a real strong team right now to face.
And for Stockport, Clarke, you feel like from what, based on what we've seen from them over the last 12, 18 months, they might just spend a load more cash in January if they think there's a chance of going up again. They've got the finances to be able to bring a couple more in if they want to.
They have. Yeah, it's an attractive club to play for. They can lure good players to Edgeley Park with decent wages. And as Sam has outlined, they are a form team, you know, third in the form table over the last 10 games. I think they are. They could easily sneak up on the rails. I don't know what they are for promotion with Quinbet at the moment, Stockport, but it might be worth having a little dabble. It's one of those where I can absolutely see them sneaking in. And I don't think the top three are set in stone, even though I think Orient are away. But Stevenage, even though I was impressed when I saw them, you know, can they sustain it? Have they got the depth? I don't know. And same with Northampton. So, yeah, I think there's a possibility for Stockport to go up automatically. This was a gift, though. This was a gift from the bad defending gods, because that was so bad. Like, I don't know if it was just the centre-backs, Murray and Meniesse, or if it was just them. But every time a ball went in the air towards them,
It was definitely the right back as well, Clarky.
It was panic station.
I didn't want to be mean about anyone, but some of it was, oh my God.
I reckon me and Sam might have got a goal apiece in that game. I'm telling you, the way, even though we're ancient. So that's how bad they were in this match.
All right, pretty bad, but not bad enough for me to have got on the score sheet as well. 2-1 Stockport with Quinbet for promotion. This is just to get promoted, Leighton Orient 1-8. So I think we can say with some certainty that they are going to go up. All right, that was the weekend review. Later, we're going to have a look ahead to some of the weekend's games in the Championship. But next today, it's our scouting report. Right, Sam. Your scouting report this week is Archie Collins. We're sticking to the theme of players who have currently or previously been involved with clubs that you two have played for. Archie Collins got the winner for Exeter at Port Vale late on in the FA Cup last month. What else do you like about him?
Well, I like that I've got a very dear friend in Belfast whose son is called Archie Collins. So I've always had a look out for this boy. He's 23 now. And he's on the cusp, right on the cusp of 200 games already for Exeter City. And I think he goes under the radar, and he shouldn't. Not in Devon, but I think across the country, he's not one that gets talked about too often. Everyone's speaking about Josh Key, I think, to be the next one to move on. And rightly so, very versatile, talented player. But I think Archie Collins is a very modern day midfielder. Box-to-box midfielder, great technical ability. Give you some of the stats at Exeter, just second to Giovanni Brown in key passes. He averages 1.9 a game. Third most key passes in the division. Only Liam Sercombe and Barry Bannon have got more. And he's fourth for overall passes. So you see that he is the fulcrum. Only two lads at Ipswich and Dobson at Charlton have played more passes. So everything goes through him. I was really impressed with him recently against Ipswich. They were struggling early on because of those two number 10s that Ipswich had. And Archie Collins was brilliant at getting the ball and breaking through that initial press. He's got great ability. He can get forward. He can drive the team up the pitch. He can get a goal, but he needs to score more. And maybe that's why teams in the higher divisions have been a little bit reluctant. That and maybe his mobility defensively. But with the ball, in terms of orchestrating, both-footed, delivery from set pieces, very, very good. And I would imagine this will probably be his last season at Exeter. Sorry to the Grecians that are listening, but I think at 23, that amount of games, the key component that he has been at Exeter.
New manager as well now. Feels like a different era.
Yeah, I think he could definitely step up to the Championship now, and I'm sure that teams will be looking to take him in the summer.
All right, so he could get to the Championship. Clarkie, your pick is already there. Fascinating career arc. This guy, I'd totally forgotten, for example, that he had a very inglorious loan spell at my own beloved Nottingham Forest way back in 2014-15. Tuba Akpom, they said he could only get it done at Pauk, but it turns out that he might be able to do the business for Middlesbrough as well.
It's a great story. It really is, because this is someone that's never been that prolific. He was in the Arsenal junior teams years and years ago. When I saw him coming through the ranks, he was rated highly. You see what's happened to Eddie Nketiah in terms of becoming sort of number two, number three striker at Arsenal. Well, Akpom was knocking on the door to be that at one point. Didn't quite happen for him. And he's never been prolific. This is his second spell at Borough. In his first spell, he got 5 goals in 40. He's now got 8 in 15. So it's a big difference. Is it sustainable? Well, he loves Michael Carrick. He went on record. I don't know if you saw this. He went on record with the local paper recently, and he said, "I know I'm going to get battered by the lads for this, but I've got to say it anyway. Michael Carrick is the best manager I've ever played for." I mean, he's only been there. How long has he been there? About 6 weeks, hasn't he? The absolute, you know, Champions League level brown nosing.
Also, literally played under Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit offensive, but we can deal with that. But I've analysed his goals. And almost every single one of them is about 3 yards out. He's the 6 yard box predator that every team needs, really. And when you sort of break down those goals, a lot of the finishes come off the back of good movement, really clever movement. Sam will know all about this, of course. Making sure you stay in between the posts, because that's where the vast majority of goals are scored. And he's like moving one way and then the next and darting in front of defenders. He's peeling off the shoulder of others. He scored headers, right foot, left foot. But most of them are very much close range. And some people might think, well, that's anyone can do that. But no, I don't think that's true. I think that it takes smart movement and maybe maturity. He's 27 now. And maybe he's finally worked out that If when play is building up out wide, I stay in this position and show a bit of movement, I'm going to get my goals. It helps, I've got to say, that Middlesbrough have two very good wide players in Isaiah Jones and Ryan Giles. They create good chances. No one's created more big chances, actually, than Ryan Giles this season in the Championship. So if you've got two good wide players and you're a penalty box, a 6 yard box striker, it's a great recipe, isn't it? And statistically, 0.74 goals per 90. That makes him second only to Ollie McBurney in the Championship this season. So he's scoring at a pretty tidy rate as well. So yeah, providing the wide men stay fit and they supply that ammunition, I think Tuba can carry on scoring goals. He's also playing in a number 10 role, which is worth pointing out. He's just in behind Mikel Fors at the moment. So he's making a lot of these runs into the box from deep, and that's probably made him harder to track than if he was up top on his own. So, yeah, well done Carrick for putting him there, and well done Tuba for finally sort of getting in the prolific mode.
Yeah, see if he can continue that when they take on Luton at the Riverside this weekend. So that is Archie Collins of Exeter and Tuba Akpom of Middlesbrough, the subjects of this week's scouting report. The Championship returns in full this weekend. We picked out a couple of eye-catching games. We'll look ahead to those next. Right, I'm legally obliged to refer to Blackburn Rovers versus Preston North End as a Lancashire hot pot. Tick. They face off at Ewood Park with Blackburn third, 2 points off second place Sheffield United. Preston only outside the playoffs on goal difference. Blackburn, Adrian, have had a long time to stew on that defeat at Burnley before the break, but they are pretty good at home in the league.
Do you know what? I've got in my notes right in front of me here, Rovers have had a long time to stew on that chasing them through the loss to Burnley.
I like the fact that stew and hot pot came within a couple of sentences of each other as well.
Exactly. I've got that right in front of me. Yeah, they have. But you could say the same about Preston. Their last game was a 4-2 loss to Millwall, wasn't it? There's real similarities with these two sides. Basically, whoever scores first wins the game. You heard it here first. This is what should happen anyway. Blackburn, 12 wins from 12 when they've scored first. Preston, 6 wins from 6 when they've scored first. So, yeah, let's see. And it is the team with the second best home record against the team with the second best away record. So it's going to be close. Really tight run thing. I don't think there'll be loads of goals in it because both suffered chasing in defeats. I think that there'll be a real focus on making sure that they're not leaky. So yeah, I think this local derby will be keenly contested, but defences might be on top. So if we get a goal, that might be just the one. It's a game between two strong teams.
Fascinated, Sam, by Championship managers' attitudes individually towards the World Cup break. You know, before Nathan Jones scarpered from Luton, he was lamenting it and the effect that the tight schedule had had on his players, etc. I noted from Blackburn's website that they've been in Marbella soaking up the sun, beating Ajax and Hearts in a couple of kickabout games. Yondal Thomason must be absolutely licking his lips, mustn't he? He gets a second pre-season with his new team. Go and spend some time in the Spanish sun in December rather than being in Lancashire. Lovely old job.
I'd have been all over it. All over this World Cup if I was a Championship player. Yeah. You should have seen my face when we got an international break when I was playing up in Scotland. International break? I'd never even heard of that. I was like straight on a plane. Glorious. Glorious. Saturday to Saturday, Scotland was, and then nice little couple of weeks away. The players would have really enjoyed that. I'd imagine I know exactly the facility they would have stayed in Marbella. I've been there with St Mirren the last couple of years of my career, and they probably would have got a little day out, maybe a little 12 p.m. curfew, I would imagine. Clarkey, what do you reckon? But there definitely would have been
a golf day in there, wouldn't there?
There would have been a saunter down to the port, wouldn't there, to see watch
down on the corner.
Watching a game in Lineker's during the World Cup during the season. Oh, it's lovely. You wouldn't have got much sun, but still, that would have been very nice. And I did enjoy that they played Hearts and Ajax. That's tremendous. Teams doing a similar thing. But yeah, I can't really add anything to what Clarkey said other than, yeah, I think Blackburn are defensively very good right now, especially at home. They haven't conceded in this brilliant run at Ewood. I think they're six on the spin at Ewood, actually, in terms of victories. So, and Preston, we know, don't score many, especially from open play. So it could be pretty narrow, not a lot between the two sides. In terms of personnel, I'll be interested to see if Whiteman's back for Preston, because I think he's there kind of similarly to Archie Collins, a bit of a fulcrum in the midfield, really makes them tick. And I think teams invariably set up to stop him when they're playing against Preston. So if he's recovered from his thigh injury, that's good news for Preston.
Blackburn 6-5 to win this with Quinn Bet, 23-10 for both the draw and for Preston to win. Elsewhere, leaders Burnley travel to West London to take on still managerless Queen's Park Rangers. This one's Sunday, 1 o'clock UK time. Interesting reports this morning, Tuesday, Clarkey. As we record, Burnley coming into this game 3 points clear of Sheffield United. My Burnley supporting mate was a bit miffed that Vincent Kompany was doing some punditry at the World Cup. He's going to be feeling even worse this morning because he is in the frame / front runner to get the Belgium job. That would be a massive blow for Burnley given the start that he's had at Turf Moor.
Disappointed that he wasn't at Lineker's in Marbella. The lads.
I mean, there's a point. There is a point there because only not long ago, Kompany was in the studio. So yeah, you could suggest that he was neglecting the lads back at home.
But he might have been scouting the Belgium squad. It turns
he's
out.
Not taking the Belgium job. I mean, did you watch them? They were crap. Absolutely useless. I wouldn't be taking that job. Not at this stage of his career. Plenty. He's such a Belgian legend that he can name the time in his career where he wants to take that. He can pick the next golden generation if he wants. No, he's doing very well at Burnley. I think he's got a brilliant chance to take them into the Premier League. And if he guides Burnley back to the top flight, his stock as a head coach is off the scale, isn't it? And potentially, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but it potentially would put him in the frame to be a future Manchester City manager. We know that Pep Guardiola isn't going to be at the Etihad forever. In the here and now, if Guardiola turned around tomorrow or at the end of this season, say, and said, right, that's me, I'm done, I'm leaving, Vincent Kompany would have to be in the top two or three names to take that City job, not least because of the football that he's producing at Burnley. He's changed that style. So I think he can do better than Belgium personally. And look, it's a tough game for QPR because Burnley were flying, weren't they? That was that excellent win against Blackburn that we were just talking about. So yeah, I think Burnley are well placed for the second half of the season. I really do.
Burnley scored at least 5 more goals than any other team in the league, but no other side in the top 5 have conceded more. So they really are the great entertainers. Now, this is their first away game since they got smashed at Sheffield United 5-2. Only won 2 of their last 7 on the road in the league. QPR, Sam, it's the team that you support. The top 4 contenders to replace Mick / Michael Beale, according to the bookies, Neil Critchley, Anthony Barry, Chris Wilder, and Marty Sifuentes. Now, I know you're a big fan of what he's been doing at Hammarby. Is he your favourite?
Yeah, third place finish. Yeah, of course. In the Swedish division. Europe next season.
Yeah, what's he won, though? What's he
Marty
won?
Marty and the boys. It's third, mate. Third. Don't take that at QPR. Playoff. Oh, Bobby Zamora. No, I'm not that familiar with his work, to be honest. But that would be less surprising, maybe, than Mark Robbins getting a job. I've just said that on a whim, but yeah, I'd probably
they should have someone
that.
In by now, shouldn't they? I mean, the season's starting again.
Yeah,
on Sunday.
Yeah, it's a bit of a worry, isn't it? Yeah, I was doing probably what you've been doing this morning, Matt, and that's looking, you know, across various internet pages trying to get the latest news. And it sounds like Paul Hall's going to be in charge. I know Paul a little bit, and he's been at the club a long time, so he'll know the players. I think I'd like to get a new manager in, obviously. I think the Anthony Barry link is, and we're probably, they would kind of probably fit the last appointment, you know, the last couple of appointments in terms of the style you would imagine. I think this is a game, thinking of my own experience as well, where the lads will quite fancy this. You know, they've been dealt a bit of a blow with Mick Beale leaving. They'll probably feel a little bit of resentment maybe and a bit of that extra hunger to go out there and produce in this game. And, you know, they're playing one of the top sides, the top side in the division. And typical QPR, the results have been pretty good against the top sides this division. Against the top 10, 3 wins, 2 draws, 2 defeats. The problem is they've lost the 3 of the bottom 4 at home. So, and Burnley's 2 defeats have come against promotion rivals. I wouldn't put QPR, you know, kind of in that bracket just yet. Still kind of early days, I think, and important to see how they react to losing Mick Beale. But the 2 defeats that Burnley have had at Sheffield United and Watford when physically they got beaten up, and QPR need to look at that. I'm sure they'll identify it. They need to supply Lyndon Dykes, and the 2 fullbacks need to have good games and get forward, especially in the absence of Ilias Chair, which is obviously a big blow for QPR. But I would expect a performance here from Rangers, not necessarily 3 points, but I think they'll come out firing.
If you were Celes, Sam, would you have felt a little bit like,
I'd love to be Celes, mate. I would love to be Celes.
If you were Celes, just put yourself in that dreamy position. Would you be feeling like once bitten, like as in appointing someone young, promising, that's a bit of a hot prospect? Because that's what they did with Beale. And the moment he started to show how good he was, he's coveted and he's off.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually. I've not thought of it from like a business point of view. I'm just thinking of it as a fan and having enjoyed Mark Warburton and Mick Beale and thinking that there is like a real long-term plan and managers that were going to be given time. So I thought that the club in whole was on the right road, really. Mm. And I've enjoyed the entertaining football. So, but yeah, to go with someone who's maybe a little bit more experienced and maybe got promotions on the CV and yeah, you can trust a little bit is going to see it through. Might be an idea, mightn't it? So I would, in my own mind, discount like Chris Wilder straight off, but maybe there would be some benefit to getting someone like that.
Mm. Got to say, surprising that Neil Critchley's a favourite, given what he did at Blackpool this summer. And from that perspective, either way, you'd think they'd try and build in a decent release clause this time around, just in case it does happen again. QPR 21-10 for the win with Quinbet here. The draw 23-10. Burnley to win 27-20. Those prices accurate at the time of recording. Okay, we're nearly done for today, but of course we've got a tweet of the week for you. This one comes from Shrewsbury's Rob Street. I liked this because it's got a bit of a World Cup theme to it. He's quote tweeting, of course, as has become the style of the time. Shrewsbury Town's official account simply putting a graphic up of their 2-0 win against Lincoln at the weekend with "get in there" punching fist emoji. Rob quotes it saying, 3 points and a good performance from the boys. Orange diamond, blue diamond, smiley face emoji, fingers crossed emoji for the same on Sunday. 2 England flags at Shrewsbury Town. So he's referencing the World Cup, Sam. I think that gives him a couple of bonus points.
You're becoming too soft, Matt. You slaughtered someone the other day for saying, enjoy your weekend.
Yeah, I hate that.
And you're enjoying this. It's standard stuff, isn't it? He gets a little extra mark, yeah, for bringing England into play. But the previous sentence, not doing anything for me. 5.
Okay. So, Clarkey, you similarly unimpressed?
Yeah, not impressed at all. No, back to the drawing
board. He's a young kid who's just joined on loan from Crystal Palace. He's feeling, his bio is footballer for Crystal Palace with an eagle emoji on it, on loan at Shrewsbury Town! He's just loving life.
I did read one of the first replies and says that the supporter was saying he's really willing him to get a goal. So the supporters are behind him and he maybe needs a little bit of luck in front of goal, but maybe just trying to feel part of the family somewhat. So maybe I should be giving him a little bit more credit, as Matt says.
Yeah, I think he's a sweet kid by the looks of it. He's thanked the Crystal Palace Academy page for wishing him a happy birthday.
I think he was on loan at Newport last season, was he not? And I think he did well there for a period, if memory serves me right.
Yeah, massive thank you to all involved at Newport. He's let himself down here because he's tried to tag in the Newport Twitter page and got it slightly wrong. So one of them where, you know, it doesn't come up with the actual blue link to the page. Massive thank you to all involved at Newport County AFC official underscore. Was never going to be the proper link for them, was it? For making me feel so welcome, both on and off the pitch. Amber circle emoji. It's been a pleasure to wear the shirt and I wish the club nothing but success in the future. Amber heart, black heart, hashtag Amber Arby. Hashtag, oh dear. Oh, yeah. Rob, what have you done here? Hashtag RS11. He started a hashtag for his name a number, Clarky. Yeah, that's a straight red, isn't it, I'm afraid?
Oh, I think we're digging a hole here. Let's just wish him well for the season and hope that
he sounds like a
elusive
nice
goal
kid.
Comes soon and then they follow very quickly.
But what we want to hear, like, he's very nice at the platitudes, saying all the nice things. He's ticking off that box. What we want when things aren't going well, we want to hear from him then. We want to hear, you know, sort of I want to get the full package of his emotions as a footballer, not just the nice bits. So that's my advice.
Rob Street, at Rob Street 12, if you want to follow him. I just want to see him be crowned the King of Shrewsbury, so it could be Coronation Street, you could say. That really does mean it's time to go. One last mention for that offer from our sponsor, Quinbet. To coincide with the World Cup, the guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. It's where you can now get a free bet up to £35 for new customers only. Head to www.quinbet.com/world-cup-2022-offer-UK or just go to the Quinbet website and you can find it from there. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions. It's 18+, and remember, always gamble responsibly. You can find Quinbet on social media at the following handles. On Twitter, it is @Quinn_bet. On Instagram, it's Quinbet_official, and Facebook @Quinbet. Where are you, Clarky, social media wise?
Adrian J. Clark with an E.
Very simple. Sam?
@SammyParkin_.
Lovely. I am @MattDavisAdams, Davis with an E in it. You can find us on Twitter, more importantly, @EFLWhatThe. If you'd like to give us a rating on your podcast platform of choice, that'd be great as well. We're trying to grow this show so that we can keep making them for you, or just tell somebody old fashioned. That'd be good too. We'll be back next week when we'll have a full program of championship action to run through. Join us for that. If you can, for now though, from Sam, from Adrian, and from me, it's goodbye.